We're ready when you are. Thanks everybody for coming. This has been incredible seeing so many old friends today already. It's been fantastic. But this is Brandon McCarthy, as I'm sure you all know. ESPN the magazine cover last week, the week before, which was something else. Real briefly, I just want to sort of go through a little bit of Brandon's story and sort of focus on the numbers, since this is an analytics conference. And I think his story is unique, fascinating, all that stuff. So just go back 10 years ago, Brandon was the White Sox 17th round pick out of high school. Less than 3 years later, he debuted in the majors, which is incredibly uncommon for a player to reach the majors at 21, a 17th round pick, especially. That was in 2005. Now let's fast forward to about a year ago. Brandon had spent all of 2010 in the minors, mostly on the DL, right, with a shoulder injury. We'll talk about that a little bit later. At that point, again, this is a year ago, his career Major League Baseball numbers included a 20-24 record, a 4.56 ERA, 3.5 walks per 9 innings, roughly 2.0 strikeout-to-walk ratio, which is not all that bad. The problem was, and Brandon can probably speak to this at some point as well, giving up a lot of home runs, 1.3 per 9 innings, which is obviously too many. that was a year ago. For those who don't know, who weren't following the season, in 2011, were you in the rotation start of the season? I apologize for that.
Last year.
Yeah. Signed with the A's as a free agent after 2010, which he spent in the Rangers organization. Signed with the A's. And by the way, when he pitched in 2010, with the Rangers in AAA, pitched real well, just didn't pitch a lot. Had a fantastic strikeout-to-walk ratio, which is, I would assume, due to some adjustments that you've made. And that really showed up in AAA, but the Rangers did not call him up in 2010, and he was hurt most of the season. Anyway, last season, 25 starts with the A's, 3.32 ERA, and here's the fun part. 1.3 walks per 9 innings, which was third best in the American League. 4.9 strikeout-to-walk ratio, which was second in the American League. And the home runs, which had been 1.3 per 9 previously, 0.6 last year, which was third in the American League. So, I mean, we saw basically a transformation. It's really hard to find anything like that ever happening. His WAR was also excellent. His FIP, which you're all familiar with from Fangraphs, Fielding Independent Pitching, was 2.86, which is sort of an ERA scale, number one in the American League. His expected FIP, which David Cameron had to explain, I never quite figured it out, but it has to do with home run rates, I think, was also very good, 3.3, sixth in the American League, right between Dan Heron and David Price. So that's the kind of season that Brandon had last season. Again, not something we would ever expect, although I think the A's were obviously optimistic, but they wouldn't have signed him and wouldn't have given him a rotation spot, which of course he earned last spring here. I think the first thing I'd like to just sort of start off with is your minor league career was incredibly impressive, which is why you reached the majors so quickly. And then you got to the majors and things didn't work quite as well. And I think, you know, I've read some things that you said. We did a little interview last year, but I'm wondering how much of it was physical ability and how much of it was the mental aspect of reaching the majors?
It started mostly with the physical, which then feeds into the mental. I was not as physically good as I thought I was in the minor leagues. That gap narrowed. The things I was able to do in the minor leagues, I was not able to do in the big leagues anymore. And that just in turn kind of killed me mentally. And then it was a long cycle to build myself out of that.
Well, if I can start first, do you believe there's such a thing as a 4A pitcher?
No. I guess it would be in how you define it. The same with hitters, same with pitchers. It's 4A is mentally unable to do it at one level. I think that's just what it boils down to. You can't be that good at AAA as a hitter or as a pitcher and not that good in the big leagues. The gap is large. It's not that large. most of the people I know that kind of fall into that middle ground, there's something there mentally that just they can't quite overcome. And I think sometimes you see people do it, and they get there. Nelson Cruz is a great example. For years, you saw that he was Babe Ruth in AAA in the big leagues. He wasn't serviceable, and then all of a sudden, it just clicked, and it went. And I know that he finally found himself mentally. He was able to relax and do everything he needs to do, and I think that's how you make that 4A jump. It is just being able to get over that mental hoop.
Now, when you reached the majors in 2005 and struggled a little bit, especially with the home runs, were you 100% physically at that point?
Yeah. Until 2007, I never had any sort of physical issue at any level ever.
So in 05 and 06, it was really just a matter of not trusting your stuff enough? Was it? I mean, can you go into a little bit of detail on what the issue was mentally for you?
2005 was, at the beginning, it was the first time I had failed in years, at least going back through until my junior high school where I had any extended run of not being successful. I didn't quite know how to deal with that. The end of that season, I was able to get it back, and I felt like I was back to where I needed to be and throwing well. 2006 was a personal loss for me because I was in the bullpen and I didn't adjust to that well. I'm extremely routine oriented. Everything is kind of playing out to the minute, and I lost that in the bullpen. It's just there's too much chaos being a reliever for me to deal with. I can't sit there and eat candy and goof off and try and burn things in the burner for three innings and then try to get Torrey Hunter out with bases loaded. It just didn't make sense. There were days where I was very comfortable, days where it didn't make any sense. So the whole year kind of became lost, and that's where I lost my mental confidence in that year, or at least lost my sense of routine and lost kind of the pitcher I'd become.
And in 2007, you suffered a shoulder injury for the first time?
Yeah.
The shoulder?
That was a shoulder, yeah, uh-huh. About May, I think.
In 2007?
Mm-hmm.
And what did that do for your confidence?
That was weird. It was the first time I'd ever been hurt, so I didn't know how to deal with any of that. I actually started to throw really well going into that, kind of getting myself back to where I wanted to be, and then missing 2.5 months or whatever it was. I didn't get lost again, but it was just sort of, what the hell am I doing? I don't know how to come back from an injury. I don't know how rehab works. I don't know how to rediscover myself and do it. Unfortunately, I've become really good at that process, but in 2007, I didn't understand it.
And at what point did you stumble across FireJoeMorgan.com?
I want to say the first time I really read it was 2008. In spring training, I came up with like a strain 4 on muscle, and me and my wife and I were living in a house in Arizona, just rehabbing and going through that 4 routine of rehab. And I just kind of got I'm addicted to information. I have to constantly be reading stuff on the internet about anything and everything. And somehow, I don't remember where I saw a link to it, and I just was hooked. It was the funniest thing I'd ever read. Even though I was unfamiliar with most of the things they were talking about, that was kind of my beginning launch off point. I was able to research the things that they were talking about, see why the things they were saying made sense, why everybody else was wrong and they were right. And I was just hooked from that point on.
It's interesting because most people, I mean, Fire Joe Morgan, for those who weren't there when it was still around, was basically a humor site in a sense. But they did reference sabermetrics to some degree, and I think it's interesting you found that as a gateway to the other stuff. And then where did you go after that?
That was just kind of, I think, random. It wasn't like I dove into it head first. Really, the beginning of Fangraphs is when I really started to get into it, when you could just see it all in one easily accessible place. More writing than some of your stuff. Anybody that really kind of had stuff out there that was against the mainstream, I just started to kind of find and scout out myself.
Well, that's my next question, is what did you see on, say, Fangraphs that was actually relevant to what you were trying to do at that initial stage when you really didn't know what you were wanting to do?
It had nothing to do with me at that point. That was just solely, I liked looking at it so I could argue about baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It was just purely for argumentative and then understanding what I'm watching purposes. It wasn't for another year or two that I actually tried to apply it to myself. I liked what Fire Joe Morgan did, and so I just wanted to do that and yell at people about stuff that they were wrong. And that's how I got it.
So when you eventually ultimately did find something that was useful for you, what was it?
I mean, I'd known for years I'd given up too many home runs.
Right. It's kind of hard to miss that, right?
Yeah, that wasn't an advanced principle. I mean, there were, you can be as old school as you want, you can come up with too many home runs. So I knew that that was something I needed to have lower, and I also knew I just never got ground balls. You'd watch other people throw, and I just constantly, it was all fly balls for me.
Yeah, that been the case in the minors as well? Were you always a fly ball?
Always have been, mm-hmm. Yeah. So as I started to kind of make that realization, it was getting too hard for me. Even to have an okay game, I was working much too hard. Got much too hard. Everything I was doing was just kind of, was tougher than it should be. And then I watched guys who got ground balls all the time and just kind of worked inside the strike zone. And it always looked easy, and they didn't ever seem as tired. And then Roy Halladay was a big part of that. I would just watch him, and it just looked easy, easy, easy. And I just kind of got hooked on that idea. So I just, the more I looked at the stats, I realized that ground balls are good. Not walking people is good. And then hopefully as an offshoot of that, you have less home runs.
Well, one of the interesting things about your career to me is that when you're in the minors, you didn't walk anybody. Your strikeout-to-walk ratio was outstanding. And then you get to the majors, and it wasn't. Your command of the strike zone. And now it is again. I know you're throwing different pitches. We can talk about that, too. I mean, the cutter and the sinker. But you're throwing more strikes now than you did earlier. But you throw a lot of strikes in the minors as well. Is it a confidence thing that allows you to throw more strikes now? I mean, what's led to this, all of a sudden, this much lower walk rate?
I think it's confidence at the heart of it. Too, I've cleaned up mechanics. Before, they were just so herky-jerky and inconsistent that if I wasn't mentally strong, I couldn't even accidentally throw quality strikes. And then when you don't feel mentally confident, you're not in a 1-0 count, you're just not confident in throwing a fastball away for a strike. So you just kind of nibble on the edge, and then you're in a 2-0 count. And then eventually it either turns into a walk or you're about to get killed. So now, once I was able to start moving pitches, and I knew that I could get ground balls with them or just get a little bit more contact, it just seemed easier to me. Now I'm just going to throw in the strike zone. If it's 2-1, I'm going to throw something that moves. Hopefully it's going to move the way you don't think it's going to move. And it's just going to move up your barrel, and I'll trust it. And that's why now if I give up hits or something happens, I don't worry about it, because it just means they just were able to get it. But confidence is the biggest thing.
And I'm sure that there are a lot of pitchers out there who would love to get more ground balls and throw more strikes. What was the process like where you learned how to do that? Who did you pick up the pitches from? It sounds like, I think you changed your delivery to drop down to 3/4.
Originally I just kind of set out, and I was just, I want to become Roy Halladay. I mean, the simplest way was just, I just want to do that right there. Sinker, cutter, curveball, occasional changeup. That seems easy, and I think I can do that. He doesn't throw super hard. I felt like that was within my realm of physical possibility. So that's what I looked at. And then eventually, about a year later, is when I made the full physical transformation to dropping my arm down, which then kind of facilitated a little bit more sink and a little bit more cut. I was able to manipulate the ball a little bit more. So it was a slow evolving process, but at the start was looking at that and just saying, that's what I want to do. And then eventually the physical side led to that.
And did you need to learn the cutter and sinker from another pitcher or another pitching coach, or did you just pick it up on your own?
At that time, I was playing with Scott Feldman and Tommy Hunter, who both are basically sinker-cutter guys. And me and Scott are very close, and Scott was a big help for me. Just, this is how I throw this, this is how I throw this, this is a thought process. And the stuff that I throw now is, at least grips-wise, it's somewhat similar to him and somewhat similar to Tommy's. And then you just kind of ask everybody, pitching coaches, anybody else you can get around, how have you seen this pitch thrown, how have you seen this, and until you find something that's comfortable. And then it ended up coming pretty quickly for me, where I found two grips that I was comfortable with, I could throw, and then just kind of try to iron things out from there.
Now, does most of that work happen in practice, or do you have to actually, I know you have to work on it during games as well, but are there situations where you try to throw a sinker and it doesn't work and the guy hits it hard and it's like, why am I even doing this? I mean,
yeah, especially early on in 2009, it was when I was coming back from an injury. I was just kind of tired of the same process, so I started to slowly put it in. And in some of the minor league rehab games, I would throw a sinker when I thought it was a sinker, and it just was straighter than ever, and it would just get crushed. A cutter that would go to the backstop. There's all those little hiccups in there that you just don't really know what you're doing. But then it kind of came along from there, and it's something I would work on in bullpens and work on playing catch. It was something that I don't know the range of, at least Mike Maddox, I don't know that he was thrilled with it. I don't know that anybody was really open to it. It was something I just kind of took on myself, and so it was more just playing catch. I'm going to do this and kind of see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. And when did you feel like, was it in AAA where you felt like this is really working? Like, in, you remember a time, a game where you, and this sort of clicked?
Yeah, there was, at the beginning of 2010 in spring training, I was going and competing for a job in rotation, and my first three outings, I believe, were just, I was kind of getting beat to death on balls of play. I just, everything was finding a hole. I wasn't really sound yet and confident. And then I got sent down and I pitched in, a high A game that next day. And that day I went out and just got ground ball after ground ball after ground ball. And I just, something came off my chest and I felt released. And then from that point on, it's been completely different where I just, it's like, this is what I'm going to do if I can see it. Yeah, let's just go.
So I don't know the timetable. So you're throwing well in AAA that season, 2010, and then you get hurt the rest of the season. What was the?
I got hurt kind of at the same time I had been getting hurt, right around May. We just tried some different things to get back a little bit sooner. I just wanted to have a shot to be in the big leagues that year, whether it was going to be in the bullpen or anywhere I could. So I little false starts that were probably ill advised, but we just gave it a shot. So I missed a little bit more time than I should have, and then coming back, it was just. There were some roster issues, so I came back a little bit later to make sure that I could pitch through the end of the season because I didn't want to go pitch in winter ball. So I ended up missing a big chunk in the middle of the season. I didn't really have to. It's just kind of ended up happening.
Were you surprised that you didn't get called up in September that year?
No. The writing was on the wall. At that point, they had picked up Jorge Cantu, and he had my number. So I guess I don't need that anymore. So I knew it was coming, and I mentally, it was fully prepared for, I'm going to be released, I want to go play in winter ball, keep this going, and then find a good team.
And what happened in winter ball?
I threw really well there. I kind of kept going with where I was going. I worked on getting my arm a little bit lower there, and it's much closer to where it is now. And I threw well, and I think I was only there for 4 or 5 starts. Mm-hmm. Came back for our wedding, and that was it.
And then spring training, a year ago, I would assume went quite well, and sort of felt like, you finally had it?
Yeah. And there were some little refinements in there. It was the first time I was really under a pitching coach that didn't know what I did before, that had no idea of what was going on. So he just saw what I was there, and he just kind of looked at it. He tinkered with a few things, moved me to the other side of the rubber, and then I could actually get to work on doing what I wanted to do, which was working on sequencing with new stuff and different stuff, and just kind of being talked to by someone who doesn't have the previous me, he doesn't know anything about it. It's just he can see what's there, and that was kind of free for me.
So you mentioned something. I did a little interview with Brent last summer, and you mentioned that you weren't sure you'd ever get to pitch 200 innings in the season. You might just make a career of 140 or 160, which I don't think I've ever heard a pitcher say anything like that before. I mean, the goal is just to get healthy enough to make 30 starts. And what are your feelings about your, I mean, do you think it's chronic and it's just going to be something you live with forever, or do you have some hope that it'll be gone eventually?
At this point last year, or at least when we talked last year, I really was resigned to that fact that I was going to be at most 160 to 170. This is just something that's going to happen when I came back.
I'm sorry, can you talk a little bit, celebrating what the injury we're talking about? It's not something that happens to most pitchers, right?
No, it's basically documented in baseball history. There's 5 of them, I've got 4 of them. It's a scapular stress fracture. It's just in the back of the shoulder, and there's a muscle group back there that when it gets inflamed, it pulls on the bone. Eventually, the bone just says that's enough, and it just cracks a little bit. Within a few weeks, it ends up healing, and then I can come back, and there is no residual effects to it. It just stays healthy until I do it again. But it just seemed like it kept happening at the same time, and it happened last year, even after all the mechanical changes, and I just kind of came to the, like, this is just what's going to happen now. Going through the rehab process last year, we changed my throwing routine up, a few different stretching things in there, met with some doctors that had some decent thoughts on this that were a little bit different from anything I had heard. And then I think I made 16 more starts at the end of last year, and we checked it out all the time. Constant MRIs, let's see what this process looks like, where is this going, and it just never showed anything else from that point on. It just got healthier and healthier and healthier. So that's actually given me some encouragement now that this might be, we might have found something to get past this. Again, if it does happen this year, I know we're on that mentally to deal with it. But I'm going to say one more time that I do want to become a 200 inning pitcher, 200 plus, and just be able to be kind of one of those rotation forces.
Right. So do you still look at the data and sabermetric stuff? I mean, there's a lot of different categories we can talk about, but Do you look at PitchFX data, for example? Is that something that you use regularly?
PitchFX is probably the most, the thing that I use the most, at least in this realm, outside of using video. I like having, one, the confirmation of, okay, that pitch did that. I like to see how much my sinker's moving, what the cutter's doing, what does my breaking ball look like. Anytime I try and venture back into throwing a changeup, I like to see how bad it was using it. So it's just kind of a confirmation for me, but I can also make game-to-game adjustments that sometimes the sinker is running too much, there isn't actually enough sink on it, and then I know what the correction is for that, and I can do that. Sometimes games just happen so fast, and video can lie to you, that PitchFX is kind of the one thing that's just truthful, like you can think you're doing something, and it just tells you right there, you didn't do that or you did do that.
And is that the PitchFX, is that something that the team works with you on, or is that something you do on your own?
I do on my own. I've started talking to a lot of other guys last year about it, some of our hitters. Like, it's just a cool tool that we can use if there's something you can see. We were facing Pineda for the first time last year. You know, something we hadn't seen him yet. Like, well, there's two starts on here, and one start we can look at. You know, his fastball does this. It does have a little run, even though it looks straight on TV. But no, as a team, at least, we don't discuss it openly, and I don't know that the team comes to us with it, but it's something that I like talking to other guys about.
What about hitter tendencies? Is that something that's useful to you as well?
Yeah, but on a very simplistic level. I'm not very advanced with that. I don't like too much information. I like knowing where a guy's swing path is, what he's prone to hit, what he's prone to not. And I just kind of like finding little holes in a guy's swing. If he can't hit in this zone, he's a little stronger there. But that's really about as deep into that as I go.
Is it, what percentage of the time do you throw the sinker or the cutter?
It's probably 55-45 sinker to cutter. Mm-hmm. But some games that varies. Some days it's 70-30 one way or the other. It just depends on the team and what we're trying to do that day, or just sometimes that's just the way it doesn't happen.
And you don't have the fourth seamer at all anymore?
I started throwing it last year. I would throw it only if I wanted to throw an elevated fastball to somebody for a strikeout, and then I ended up just realizing why not throw a cutter. It's the same philosophy that if they're going to try and hit it, I'd rather just have it moving.
Mm-hmm. And what about, this maybe the last question, I'm not sure, but have you looked at any of the numbers? You look at any numbers that are less than encouraging? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, when you look at your whole, you probably looked at your page on Fangraphs. You see anything there that makes you pessimistic about what's going to happen this season?
No. The one thing I want to adjust is strikeouts. Like anybody, you want them higher, but I do understand that to have sustained success, that needs to increase. And I think going back to Roy, you've seen his strikeouts go up and up every year, and he has more and more success, and he's able to adapt. Hitters will be a little bit more familiar with what I'm doing this time around. So I need to kind of change my game a little bit to. Last year I became too contact oriented, I think, especially with two strikes, and this year it's going to be a little bit more, let's try and get a strikeout when we can get it, while trying to keep everything I've been doing before. But that's really the only thing that stands out in my mind is needs to be adjusted.
One thing there are probably numbers that you just can't really do much about. I mean, for example, I noticed that your home runs per fly ball was exceptionally low last year, which you probably know. It was 6.4%, which was the fourth lowest in the AL. Mm-hmm. You probably also know that that's not something that a pitcher has much control over.
Right.
So, I mean, does that give you pause? I mean, you can't really throw many fewer, you're not going to get many fewer fly balls. You've already got a very good ground ball, right?
Yeah, I think that's where there's a mental thing. Last year I really tried to think about this is can you control home runs? And I think if you're on a normal starter's workload, 10 home runs are just going to happen. It's just, they're just going to, someone reaches out on a pitch, someone hits one in a small barn park, the wind's blowing out, you make a horrible pitch that are just, there's nothing you can do about, they're going to happen. Everything from there on out is failure on your part. So it's, again, trying to minimize that. There are, it's a constant level of focus to stay ahead of the game and to kind of, or at least stay within yourself. So anytime I usually give up a home run, I know it's happening before it happens. It's just a crazy, crazy thing where you lose confidence for a second, you doubt yourself, you doubt the pitch selection, and then sure enough, the guy gets thrown around the bases. So it's trying to minimize that as much as you can more than anything else.
Can you talk a little bit about, I mean, most of us haven't experienced it, at least not in a long time, what that feeling is like when you see that pitch going in and you realize what's probably going to happen?
It's awful. It's just, it feels really long. And even if it, and I still get the same feeling even if there isn't a home run hit on it. I just hate throwing unsuccessful pitches. But there's especially a bad feeling when you can feel a home run coming. There was one against Seattle last year. I pitched to Miguel Olivo where the second it left my hand, it just wanted to turn around and see how far you could hit that one. And he didn't disappoint. So it's a terrible feeling where time just sort of slows down and then you just know you're going to be punished.
Mm-hmm. What about your teammates? How many of your teammates are looking at this kind of stuff? I know Craig Breslow is well, and you guys probably talk about it all the time.
Well, Breslow's gone now, so that's... everybody's gone now.
Right.
We're starting all over, so I'll let you know in a couple months. Brett Anderson's a little bit familiar with some of these things. He knows he profiles very well. Again, it's still a new group, so I'm not sure. But in the past, it hasn't been many. There's always a few that are familiar with some of the principals, some that are familiar with them because they hate them, and then some that kind of get it. But Breslow was the one that I was able to talk to the most about it. He definitely got most of this stuff. Was into it.
You've got a reputation for being well-read, and I'm just wondering sort of why it took you as long as it did to discover sabermetrics and all the stuff that's on the web and in various books for years and years.
I don't really know.
Did you not read about baseball when you were growing up?
Yes and no. I mean, baseball is actually the one thing that I pay attention to the least. Mm-hmm. Just I need an escape to it, so I... This was actually what was nice about this was for me is I can go here and I don't get the same standard coverage that you get everywhere else. So I could read something interesting about something that wasn't so overpopular. So there was no insanity when it comes to sabermetrics. There wasn't anything that you were just getting drowned in. And so, I don't know, maybe I just never really scouted it out. And I don't think there was a lot of crossover with at least the more popular sites, at least where I went to. You know, I remember with ESPN, it was still segregated down to its own little corner. And if you just never saw something, a headline that caught your attention, you just didn't read it. And then that sort of changed with Fire Drill Morgan. I understood more headlines made sense to me so that I could start reading things. And then eventually there was a little more popular and crossover.
So here's my last question. What was it like to meet Bill James? What did you guys talk about?
We had a lot of fun that night. It was me and Breslow when we were sitting there and we saw him and he was with Poznanski, who I'm a huge fan of his writing. And so they're both sitting there together and me and Breslow were talking about, let's go up and introduce ourselves. And so we went up and we talked to him and to be honest, I almost completely forgot what we talked about. We ended up talking about a lot of random players. I remember the whole conversation it was maybe half an hour that we're just talking, the four of us and Breslow's girlfriend at the time and my wife were standing behind me. I don't think they were really thrilled with it because we didn't introduce him, we didn't bring him into the conversation. We were just having 30 minutes of nerd chat while the girl sat there, but it was a very cool experience. A guy that I would love to sit down and be able to talk to more.
Questions now from the audience? Yeah, go ahead.
It's always seemed to me that besides the analytic, the mental side of pitching is critically important. And I understand that Roy Halladay, who you've mentioned a couple of times, read a book called The Mental Side of Baseball. Have you heard of it? And what did you think of that? He's also The Mental Side of Pitching, I think he also read.
It's the one thing in this process that I've mentioned the least, but it might even be the most important thing. The book's called The Mental ABCs of Pitching. And I picked that up, and that was actually, I read that book the week before I made that second spring training where I felt like I was free and released. Made all the difference in the world to me. I know other players that have read it, and it does the same thing to them. It's the most simplistic way of playing baseball, of doing anything complicated in life, is just taking out everything but the base thing that you're actually doing. It completely changed my outlook on pitching, changed the way I approach the game mentally. I can't speak highly enough about that book. I think it should be not mandatory reading. It should be reading for everybody that is interested in it. But I thought it was fantastic.
Great.
Anyone else? Yeah, in the back.
Yeah, just have a question.
Just a question. Does the ballpark you're pitching in affect your confidence or your approach or your, you know, your kind of mental feeling about a game?
I think it can. I try not to anymore. Again, this I try to stop thinking about anything that doesn't deal with what I'm doing at the test. Just kind of going back to that last question. But in the past, I remember it used to, especially in Chicago. Even Chicago's AAA Park is a notorious bandbox in Charlotte. So sometimes it does. Now, pitching in Oakland, I don't notice it being any different than anywhere else. When I sit and actually watch a game that I'm not pitching in, you can see some balls that are killed that go nowhere. So it certainly exists, but I try not to focus on anything. Every park is just a mound 60 feet away, and that's it.
Well, being a ground ball pitcher probably helps a little too, right? Not worry so much about fly balls flying over the green monster or whatever.
Yeah, but most of it is just I try not to worry about anything ever after it leaves my hand, mm-hmm. other than my physical responsibility of covering a base or fielding the ground ball. It's just wherever it gets hit is wherever it gets hit.
Have you taken any shots to the body in the last year especially?
I had two good ones last year. I think Denard Span got me off my, it was the last thing I had. I knew the last game I pitched before I went on the DL, I knew I had my injury, and he hit me directly on the spot with the first batter of the game. That was actually caught for an out. And then I got hit by Andy Chavez in the knee, which it's a good video because it looks like I got shot. I rolled around on the ground like an idiot. I threw my back out on the same play. So the whole thing just went wrong. I was trying to avoid it this year.
Yeah. Last year, I think toward the end of the season, you had several fairly high strikeout games based on your past experience. Was that a result of something that you had done, some adjustment you made, or was that more a function of the lineups you were facing on that particular day?
No, it was something we changed, and it's become a big part of what me and Kurt Suzuki do now. And it was, we just sort of, I don't know why we didn't stumble on it earlier, why we didn't realize what was happening. When I got to two strikes, I could still throw a high fastball, which is what I used to do, the way I used to pitch. I would work on high levels like this. For some reason now, I could still throw high fastballs up and away. Just I would throw cutters up, and guys just swung and missed constantly. So the uptick in strikeouts last year in the second half was almost purely a result of that, where I could get to two strikes and throw a fastball up in both of those games. And most of those, I would say at least 80% of the strikeouts were just coming on high fastballs. And I don't know why we didn't notice it earlier. We've been doing it all year. We do it once a game. And we just never really caught on to that trend. I don't know why.
Yeah.
How did the trade from the White Sox affect you? Because I know you're still like young, coming off the World Series. And did you find yourself like comparing yourself to the other guys like Madsen and Banks, putting pressure on yourself?
It was weird. It's just such a weird feeling going to a new team. That was strange. It's hard to look back on that. Like I think I was just out of sorts anyways. The year in the bullpen, I just lost myself. So being traded was great. I can go back to, I know I'm going to be a starter now. I remember looking at the trade and thinking, I'm better than Danks and Massett. Like, this isn't going to matter. You just have that kind of, you're young and cocky. So I didn't really think anything of it. It was just, there's a new place to go play. But in hindsight, it probably did screw me up a little bit. But just kind of another thing to add on to where I just wasn't right.
You changed your pitch type and location. How important do you think pitch sequencing is?
I think it's pretty important, but it's not something that I pay a whole lot of attention to. It's something I'm going to try and focus on more going ahead to see if there is, but I still think pitch execution just kind of always wins. Most big league hitters are fantastic hitters, but they still will get beat most of the time by your pitch in your spot. So you can throw a pitch that's out of sequence, it doesn't make any sense, and if you locate it well and it does what it's supposed to do, you're probably going to win that at bat. The very, very good pitchers know their sequences and know what work. I've gotten a little bit closer to understanding sequences that I can work within. But going forward, I'd like to find some other ones that I can use and at least make more sense of some other ideas.
Do you
Yep.
I'm going to ask you from the mechanic standpoint, because I don't know how to turn an iPad on to see all this other stuff. Most pitchers that drop their arm end up getting their fingers on the side of the ball and end up seeing Dr. Joe or those guys, Andrews, pretty quickly after that. You say you dropped your arm. Are your fingers still behind the ball, both on the cutter, just like Greg Maddux did, and you're just changing finger pressure primarily?
Yeah, I mean, that's the two grips are very similar, at least the way I position my hand. It's just on a different spot on the ball. It's just one pitch, the pressure is through my index finger, the other pitch is the pressure is through my middle finger and more the pad of my middle finger. And then it just becomes a feel thing. After a while, eventually, there's some pitches on the cutter for a while, I would get around the side of it, but it wasn't too big an issue. And I think anytime you see someone doing that where they're getting around it, there's probably an actual injury that they're dealing with. Most pitchers know, even when you go sidearm, you know how to stay behind a baseball and throw it. So the getting around the ball or drooping around, I think, becomes sort of an excuse for probably some sort of an existing injury. At least that's what I've always noticed from guys that start dropping. It's because they're already hurt and they're looking for a place that doesn't hurt.
When you're throwing the cutter up to improve your strikeouts, are you doing that against left-handers as well?
That's almost primarily I'm better at it against right-handers than I am, or against left-handers than I am right-handers. I have no idea why, but there's just a spot up and away to left-handers where I feel like I can just run a cutter into all day long.
So you're backdooring it for a ball?
It is a ball up. I'd like to work it as a strike backdoor a lot, especially behind in the count, but for the elevated one, yeah, it's a ball up out of the strike zone.
Yeah, Ben?
Do you think there's a lot of pitchers who could benefit from this, or does it require your very specific mindset, and do you see yourself as a pitching coach in the future?
I don't know if a lot could benefit from it. There are certain people that could. I don't think it has to be the wholesale changes. I think some people, that you saw for the last few years, the cutters become huge in baseball, and there's a reason for it. It's just anything that moves becomes a little different. So anytime I see somebody that's just a straight four-seam guy, I would have the recommendation to try and work on a sinker or cutter or something that moves. It just, hitters describe it as being awful, so you might as well take advantage of it. I do not see myself becoming a pitching coach. I don't deal well with people in that capacity, in a coaching capacity. I like this side of the game more than I like the actual coaching and physical task. And there's just too much stuff to deal with as a pitching coach.
You have new hitters that are coming into your division for the first time that you really haven't had much experience facing before.
The rules? No, that'll be the second I get to the field the day after a start and I'm building into a next team. It's just 5 days of preparation for that team. And that's when I put into a game plan and break down hitters for that. Starting now, I think just kind of becomes, at least for me, it clouds everything too much. I'll face 100 other hitters before I face Albert. So worrying about where his hot zones are, where I can throw to him, just becomes sort of, it's placing too much importance on him as a hitter. And it just kind of becomes noise in my head. I would much rather just have my 5 days where they're the actual focus. And again, it's not even placing more focus on him. I would pay just as much attention to Kendrick and Torrey as I would Pujols. But when the time comes, then I'll actually sit down and look at him.
What else? Well, I'd like to thank Brandon for coming tonight.